Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not by now.
No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the fucking ball. Guy gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast, thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. We are back talking about sports movies. It has been a hot minute since this podcast did an episode on what it was founded on, just talking about a sports movie that may or may not be very good. Little housekeeping before we get into it. If you've been enjoying the Ted Lasso rewatch, I've got great news that's coming at you for the rest of season two every Thursday. Me and Alex McDaniel, sometimes a pinch hitter, if need be, like today's guest. But yeah, we're breaking that down every Thursday. And if you've been wanting to support the show, if you wake up every morning being like, how can I support Big Screen Sports? So the first thing you can do is go leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, which I have said for 150 episodes now. And if you want to take it a step further, go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. Support the show. We've got some cool perks. You can pick movies, pick episode content, maybe do some AMAs, including a Ted Lasso AMA coming up. Stickers, just sent out some stickers. And shout out to our producer patrons, Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Christine, and Kevin Frost. Again, if you want to support the show and get some cool perks, go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. Now, one of the perks that our patrons get is selecting a movie to be covered on this podcast once a month, the Patron's Choice movie. And this episode is our first ever Patron's Choice movie. The patrons have selected the movie we are covering. It is The Longest Yard. And joining me to cover The Longest Yard in the first Patron's movie selection, it is my buddy J.R. Hickey returning to the podcast after really just a one-week hiatus because you talked some Ted Lasso with me last week. But man, how are
Crash,
you doing?
How long's it been? 5 days?
Too long.
Six?
Too,
nothing's changed.
Too damn long. Before we get into talking about The Longest Yard, you've got something different to promote than you did a week ago.
Yeah. It's interesting. If anyone follows me on the socials, at JR will do it. I have this other account that I've been running for the past 3 years called Best of LinkedIn, where I make fun of the ridiculous, over-the-top bullshit stories that people share on the social media platform LinkedIn. And it's gotten a lot of attention and traction over the last 3 years. Probably one of the more successful things that I've done.
It's doing better than both our podcasts combined, actually.
It's doing better than any social media thing I've ever done. And so it was just kind of this thing I did in reaction to just all that fake bullshit you see on LinkedIn. And very long story short, I've started giving talks about the account and what I've learned from the account and basically how the account has changed my career. I'm 33 years old, and about 4 years ago, I just dropped out of my previous career completely to pursue doing advertising and content and social media stuff full time. And I want to tell that story to more people. And South by Southwest, the Arts and Music Festival in Austin, Texas, coming up in March of 2022, is giving me an opportunity to do that. So what I would love for anyone to do, if just you're so inclined, if you're feeling generous, or if you're just a fan of Best of LinkedIn, or maybe even a fan of me and Kyle, go to the link in Kyle's show notes of today's episode and just vote on me giving this talk. It's literally like a thumbs up vote. You do have to create a South by Southwest account, use your email address, unsubscribe from all their emails. It takes like 15 seconds total. It would mean a lot to me. I really want to come to Austin. I want to see Crash in person. I want to record a couple of these face to face. Having South by Southwest fly me out and putting me up to do that under the guise of giving this talk about Best of LinkedIn would be an honor. So yeah, if you guys could do that, that'd be huge. If not, no big deal. I'm just some random asshole on the internet. And I hope you enjoy the episode.
And when you do it, you might find out you already have a South by Southwest account, which I did. I had to reset my password because I had no idea what it was. Like he said, the link's going to be in the show notes. If you do vote for JR, screenshot it, send it to me on Twitter, DM me on Twitter, and you'll get a shout out in the next episode of this show. I would love
send it to me as
send
well.
Send it to JR yeah. as well. Yeah, I need him in Austin. But let's talk about a movie that our beloved patrons have selected. It is The Longest Yard, the 2005 version, the Sandler version, comedy. Prison inmates form a football team to challenge the prison guards. IMDb, whoever wrote that summary is, I mean, right, but lazy. It starred Adam Sandler, Burt Reynolds, Chris Rock, and just had a million cameos. This is the second highest grossing sports comedy of all time. Behind the Waterboy.
What?
Behind the Waterboy.
Holy shit.
This one.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That's great news to start this off with. So first off, when you asked me to do this movie, I had to clarify. I'm like, this isn't the 1974 Burt Reynolds version, right? And you're like, no, it's the Sandler comedy, 2005. And I was like, thank God, because we can have so much more fun with this today than we did when we did, what the hell was it called?
Oh,
the track.
Oh,
movie.
God, we did Chariots of Fire, which Fire soundtrack, bad nothing, bad anything else.
Just like not a lot to react to in that movie. No. And I gotta imagine any sports movie from the 70s is like, just changed. It's 50 years old at this point. So super pumped to be talking about
this. The thing with this one, what is it about this movie? This movie is of an interesting time, 2005, when they were still making movies like this and putting them out into theaters and having them gross over $100 million. It's a movie that has resonates with our generation pretty well, apparently, because most of the patrons, I think, are in that general bell curve, and they voted for this one very handedly, nominated and voted for it. Why do people love this movie so much?
I think it's what you just said. I mean, not only is it Adam Sandler still kind of at his peak, which we'll talk about, like coming right off the heels of 51st Dates, which is an incredible Adam Sandler movie, but the cast of cameos in this has aged really well, and I think were super relevant people at the time. How old were you when this came out, Crash?
I was 14 years old. So I thought this was the funniest thing ever at 14.
And I was 16 or 17, and I remember distinctly seeing this at the movie theater with like my high school girlfriend, who turned out consequently to be a whore. So that's a good memory that I have.
I mean,
I remember seeing this movie in theater and being like, that was a ton of fun, and I gotta rewatch that at some point. But I also think it's weirdly been lost in the sands of time and in sports movie history. Because I don't hear people talking about it. I don't read a lot. There are no memes. It just kind of disappeared.
Well, let's talk about that. So for you, is it a Hall of Fame all-star starter or bench warmer? Because there is that nostalgia for us. It's one of the few sports movies, because they didn't make a ton of them last decade compared to the 80s, 90s heyday. It's got the nostalgia factor, but how does it hold up for you, especially watching it now as an adult?
Yeah, and honestly, this was the first time I'd watched it since that fateful night in the theater in 2005. So
it scarred you, huh?
didn't catch
this one on TNT or MTV, the 40 million times it has been on? Because I almost thought about not rewatching this one. I've seen it so much.
See, honestly, no, and I think that was to my benefit, because all the jokes were fresh. I didn't remember much, if any, of the plot. It resonated so much more with me this time around, so I'm glad that I hadn't caught it on table. But so to answer your question, I think initially I thought this is maybe just shy of like an all-star, like not middle-of-the-road sports movie, but on the upper end of that. But now that you've told me that it's the second highest grossing sports movie of all time, I think it's resoundingly an all-star movie. That's fucking impressive. And the fact that Sandler is that 1-2 punch for both of the top grossing sports movies, I mean, just goes to show, you can think whatever you want about him, you can have any opinion you want. The guy is a massive money-making machine.
It speaks to the power of Sandler. And this one isn't... So this one has a 31% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's not... And like a lot of those Sandler comedies got bad. Like I think Billy Madison's Rotten Tomatoes rating is in the toilet. And Billy Madison to me is just one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. This one isn't that for me. This is probably an all-star sports movie. I think this actually has a lot of sports movie things going for it, which we're going to talk about. It's got some jokes that, if you've seen it a million times, get kind of stale, but it did have some stuff I still love, some stuff I was looking for. But you mentioned he's coming off 50 First Dates. This is, I want to say this is probably the end of the peak. And I mean, the thing is, Sandler's peak to us is different to Sandler, because with this movie, he's been able to do whatever he wants for the last 15 years. He's been able to take vacations and get paid a ton of money to make movies that kind of stink.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go over what maybe the best Sandler comedy post 50 First Dates is, because for, I think the best Sandler movie post 50 First Dates is Uncut Gems, which was fantastic.
But not a comedy.
Not what we're talking about. Cause after 50 First Dates, and really after the Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, Waterboy run, that whole thing. He kind of runs into this thing where he's still doing the comedy thing a little bit. And then he starts transitioning to the family movies, the grown-ups and stuff. So in this run, he's got, after 50 First Dates, he's got this, he's got The Longest Yard. He's got You Don't Mess With the Zohan, which I haven't seen in a while. I remember really liking it. I've got to imagine it's aged really badly.
Yeah.
He's got grown-ups. He's got I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. And he's got Click, which is one of the sneaky, saddest movies of all time.
Yeah. That's a heavy duty. That's a heavy hang for sure. Well, I'll tell you what my favorite post 50 First Dates Sandler comedy is, and it's a little expected and hipster of me, but he's really good in Funny People.
Oh,
Seth Rogen.
I didn't even think to include that, because that's such like a, but you're right. That's the best Sandler comedy since 50 First Dates.
You have a skinny Seth Rogen, and he's doing the, you know, he's trying to be a stand up. That movie is a cast of characters. Eric Bana plays like
Shout
Sandler's
out
Yeah, Munich.
Munich. Fucking capping motherfuckers.
So, again, but it's in that Judd Apatow universe. It's kind of one of these weird movies. It's way too fucking long, but Sandler playing, like, a has-been famous funny guy works pretty well. He's in love with his ex-wife, and he tries to get her. The third act is kind of a mess. There's really outdated humor and jokes in it, but he's in his element there. It's not the goofy Adam Sandler doing voices, and it's not the phoning it in Adam Sandler bringing all of his buddies and some hot actresses on vacation with him. It's somewhere in the middle, and that's why I like it. As well as I was a young stand-up comedian at one point, and I remember what that's like. It's obviously a very elevated version of that, but it touches on some truths there, which is cool.
Yeah, the first hour and a half of that movie are really good. Yeah. And kind of like you said, it really falls apart once you get to, I guess, Sandler at the house with Leslie Mann.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. I didn't even think to list that one, but that's absolutely the best Sandler movie besides Uncut Gems since 50 First Dates. But
can I give a shout out to one more that my first wife and I watched just 2 years ago?
I just went to express that JR is his only wife for folks who don't get that bit.
My first wife, and I watched Murder Mystery, the Netflix original movie.
That's with Aniston, right?
With Aniston. Not that bad. Honestly, like, it's kind of like trying to find a nickel in a pile of shit. And, like, it's good. It's entertaining. The story moves, and it's a little believable. There isn't, like, and we'll talk about this, there isn't that, like, streak of juvenile humor that a lot of Sandler movies have. For some reason, Murder Mystery is just missing that. Maybe it's because he's in his fucking 50s at this point. But, like, it kind of, and maybe it's also because I just recently gotten married, and it's like a married couple trying to rekindle things and figure it out on their, I guess, second honeymoon or something like that. So shout out Murder Mystery.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to circle around and check that out. I have another question for you. Would you watch Prison Guard Football if it was like they've been trying to make spring football work forever? Thought we had a thing with the XFL until COVID hit. If it was like Tuesday night Prison Guard Football, what's the over under on how many quarters of Prison Guard Football you would watch a week?
I'd probably tune in for a quarter and a half. But here, so the warden in this movie, and we're getting into the plot a little bit, like, explains it to Paul Crewe, a.k.a. Adam Sandler. Like, these are all ex-college stars, guys who couldn't make it in the NFL. It's very much like that TBT basketball league that we see airing every summer. So if it had that type of star wattage, if we had some, like, has-beens, some recognizable college football names now in the Texas penal system, like, I think there's something interesting about that. There's an interesting backdrop with the barbed wire and, like, the guards up in towers with rifles. But overall, I think that's where, like, the biggest hole of this movie is. It's like, why is this happening? Yeah. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. But yeah,
you need it, though. You need it for the plot. I pulled a few IMDb trivia things. Michael Papajohn was Adam Sandler's stuntman in The Waterboy, making the hard hits as Bobby Boucher. In this movie, he's the safety. He's the punt returner, the safety. Yeah. I wanted to point out Michael Papajohn because he is also in Little Big League. He's a former LSU baseball player. He's in Little Big League, which is a great movie that I was arguing about on Twitter this week. But he's great in that. And then he also shot Uncle Ben in the first Spider-Man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen Spider-Man and know nothing about those movies. But Michael Papajohn shot Uncle Ben.
What a career, though. Longest yard, Spider-Man. The first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire?
Yeah. He's the guy who shot Uncle Ben.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't want to get into Little Big League versus Rookie of the Year, but Little Big League just demolishes it. It's so good. Everyone needs to rewatch it.
And that's coming from a Chicago guy, a Cubs fan.
Yeah. No, it's a bad representation of Cubs. It's also, like, none of it was shot in Chicago, so it doesn't, like, mean anything to me.
Exactly. This next bit is something of why this movie is so good. The cast includes several WWE superstars, the great Khali, Stone Cold, Kevin Nash, Goldberg. Did I tell you I coached Goldberg's son in baseball for a brief period of time, like pre-pandemic? No. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Seeing Goldberg sitting in the stands is kind of bonkers. Super nice guy. I never talked to him, but I heard he was nice. I was only coaching at practice.
In that same light, I coached Green Bay Packers. I think he's a guard now, but he was a running back at Northwestern in college. But Green Bay Packers guard Danny Vitale. He's just a muscle-bound monster, and I taught him in track and field like a long time ago. And all these stories just prove how fucking old we are. Just like, we are just total has-been, like, losers.
Coaching Goldberg's kids. it also featured former professional football players Michael Irvin, Terry Crews, Bill Romanowski, and Brian Bosworth, plus Nelly. And Goldberg and Stone Cold were football players before they were wrestlers. I think it's one of the things that makes this movie so good, and not just because of the comedic factor of, like, oh, there's Stone Cold and oh, there's Goldberg and all that stuff. It's that, like, sports movies benefit from casting actual athletes and wrestlers. Those dudes are crazy. You have to be crazy athletic. A lot of wrestlers, Roman Reigns, The Rock, they all played football. I think it makes this movie very effective in that these guys actually look like they could be, you know, ex-college football playing prison guards.
And you know what? And this is, let's bring it back to Sandler. Sandler's an athlete. Sandler has kind of that dumpy dad body, but, like, he can very clearly throw a football. He can very clearly swing a golf club, if anyone's seen Happy Gilmore. And, like, we'll talk about the prison basketball scene with him and Michael Irvin, but, like, basketball is, like, Sandler's sport. My first wife, she used to work for Sony Pictures for 10 years in LA, and she, like, worked on the studio a lot, and she said Adam Sandler, who was, like, Sony's golden boy for decades, Adam Sandler had his own, like, basketball court that he would just run pick up all day and night in between shot setups. And I thought that's so interesting. Like, and it's very clear in that scene with Michael Irvin that the dude can hoop.
Yeah, Sandler has athleticism and athletic tendencies, and, like, he didn't look terrible throwing the football. The thing I was going to ask you, does this movie look better, come off better? Does it work a little more if he is just taller? Just look, because he doesn't look like a pro quarter, like an ex-pro quarterback. There is something about, like, I was going to ask, like, could Peyton Manning have done this? Because Peyton Manning is inherently funny. And also looks the part. I don't know if he can't do, like, the smut humor, but yeah. I was trying to think of someone who would look, because that's the thing about the quarterback position, is it just, it takes a certain look. Because if you're short, you have to look like you can fly. You have to look like Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be built. And even the guys who are, like, you look at Troy Aikman, he still cuts an imposing figure, even though he doesn't play anymore. So it's the one thing that, like, yes, Sandler Sandler can throw the football. It's certainly not a, you know, like a Freddie Prinze Jr. situation.
Yeah.
But it's, there is something of that look that when you watch it, it's just like, you know it when you see it.
Well, I looked it up and Sandler's 5'10", which is not short by Hollywood standards. It's in fact kind of tall. Most actors are like 5'6", 5'8", but it's just not tall enough for a quarterback. You're right. He needs 3-4 more inches. And that's one of those things where if he had maybe a little more attention put on that, like, they could have made him taller in the movie. It's very easy to do that with camera tricks, lifts, certain angles, etc. But I think he does the job well of, like, oh, I've been out of the league for 6 years, I have kind of a gut, you know, I've got kind of that haggard look that Sandler always has. So in that way he works. But yeah, he's not Doug Flutie, so that's the part of it that, like, does make me, it takes me out of the movie a little bit. But let's be honest, we're not watching this because I'm like, oh, I'm looking for a fundamentally sound football movie.
No, we're watching it for fart jokes. Okay, so let's go into best scene. The opening car chase, which, shout out to Courtney Cox in that one.
You know, and I'm going to quote this because it came from my wife's mouth. She's like, wow, her boobs are huge in this, which I noticed as well. But let me just to be clear, a female pointed this out.
Yeah, and it's your wife saying it, not us. Not our words, buddy.
Yeah, and I may have noticed that as well.
Yeah, the Dan Patrick cameo, the first of many cameos. I think it is good that we see this guy get thrown in prison for a really good reason, but not an unforgivable reason. Like, it's believable enough because it mentions he's on probation too. It's believable enough that, like, yeah, money can't buy his way out of this, you know, this crime. But it's also, I don't want to pull comparisons to the old movie after this, but if I remember correctly, Burt Reynolds' character, Paul Crewe, in that movie strikes his girlfriend or something like that, which is a definite no-no. And the whole movie, if we're trying to root for that guy, we would go back to, oh, yeah, but he hit his girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. It's in 2021, it just wouldn't fly. But
yeah, we can't complain also, about like Kareem Hunt playing for the Browns if we're going to root for Paul Crewe in this movie.
Well, and like, let's not be the PC police here, but like, he really makes drinking and driving look fun.
Looks
in
like
LA,
a great,
doesn't he?
Looks like a great time. I mean, it looks. I mean, he is, Paul Crewe is all out of fucks to give, and he is just getting behind the wheel of a really expensive car and letting it fly.
God bless him.
God bless him. Okay, the next scene, tryouts in the first practice, kind of, you know, blended those together. You get intro to the cast of characters that are not the in shape wrestler cameos and stuff like that. You get
the comedic relief.
Yeah, you get the Kansas State guy. You get Brucey. it's all the non-talented people besides Switowski, who is just a unit. It also, one of my throwaway like favorite lines with the creepy traitorous guard Unger, or guy Unger, who's the thing about like the blood of the guards is gonna flow like the rivers of Babylon, and Sandler said, that's great news.
Sam, first off, Unger has got a real Charles Manson thing going, just from like his face shape to his kind of hooked nose. So I think that's what they're playing off of. Sandler's deadpan delivery in this whole movie is perfect. Usually Sandler kind of hams it up, at least up until this point of his career. He's really hamming it up in his roles, but he plays this like confident, cocky, like he gets the shit kicked out of him a bunch of times and just kind of bounces back up and dusts himself off. I think it's a really nice little, I don't know if it was a conscious acting decision by Adam Sandler, but not to be that like, well, howdy do thing that Sandler always does. He's just like, all right, man, cool. This is why you can't fucking play. Sit down. Like, he does that a few times to where you're like, oh, this guy maybe is X hot shit, which is what he is.
Yeah. Besides the drunk driving scene, it's understated for Sandler terms. And then that scene, we also get Burt Reynolds, which is
amazing.
Yeah. RIP. But
you had to include him in this. Like, I mean, it would have felt like something was missing. Him being like kind of a coach figure, and then him coming at the end of the game, which we'll talk about in further categories. That was really cool.
Yeah. The recruitment scene. Long time listener to this podcast. No, I love it when the band comes together. One of my favorites. I love that they pull in like the star system. Like it's rivals.
Okay. Hazen has a rating system for every con.
What's 3 stars?
The more prone to violence that the inmate is, the more stars he gets.
5 stars is the max.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Let's see how many stars my maniacal ass got.
Wow.
Well, half a star, that's got to be a mistake. Check it again.
You're about as maniacal as a box full of kittens.
Come on, that's not funny, man. I'm going to have to stab somebody or something to get my rep up.
Why don't we have a maniacal pillow fight tonight? That could get it up, so.
Yeah, we could sell it to pay-per-view. Superstar versus half a star.
Yep.
You get the gigantic dick jokes from Goldberg again, whose son I coached, and I was watching that in a different light. But I love recruiting figuring out like, hey, how are we going to get some talent here? I also down the road I have some questions about like the five star guys. What are they in jail for?
Yeah, seriously, what happened? I mean, granted, when you're in jail, all you have to do is workouts, but
yeah,
I love that. I love how they built the team. We can talk about it a little bit more later, but like the way they did it was like Paul Crewe is like, okay, first I need protection around me, so he goes and it's like the biggest, baddest motherfuckers in the yard, and then he's like, we need some speed, so he heads over to where all the guys are playing basketball. Gets himself a running back. Go on, Trash.
You can roll right into that one on one scene with Michael Irvin and his definite steroid energy.
Yeah, we can talk about that, but I think a lot of people in this movie are on steroids. No, they make this whole side plot where like they swap out one of the prison guards' steroids with estrogen, and it's ironic because the guys swapping it out are like Terry Crews, Goldberg, and then the big Indian guy, and it's like, well, yeah, but all three of those guys doing that are actually on steroids while they're shooting this scene. Really funny stuff.
I have a question about something that happens in the basketball game when Sandler's playing Michael Irvin one-on-one. Why is Burt Reynolds dressed like a soccer dad? Like he's wearing a little like jacket and like jumpsuit kind of thing, and he's got his old OU hat. Like, sir, you're in prison. You wear the same thing everyone else has to wear.
So the first, this is a long movie. This is almost 2 hours. It's like pushing it a little bit. The first hour and 40 minutes, you don't see them in their cells. You don't see them. They are just like hanging out in a yard. Fucking Terry Crews is handing people McDonald's every other scene. You're like, none of this makes any sense, but it's a ton of fun. It's very clear that these guys had an absolute blast filming this. And that is palpable. You enjoy watching a bunch of people you recognize have fun with each other.
Yeah, which it explains basically what Sandler has done for the 15 years after, which he was like, man, me and Chris Rock get along really well. Let's run this shit back like 7 times.
These movie studios sure have a lot of money they want to give me. Next movie, Hawaii.
Next scene I've got is the first half of the game. Tried to split up the game. Actually split up the game in three different parts. Michael Irvin had to love getting in that ref's ass about the missed call. Like, you know he filmed a couple takes of that. It was like, let me just do it one more time. You know he missed it.
Here's the first sign of life from the cops. Let's see if Paul Motley Crew can make something happen. On first down, Crew will throw. He's got Deacon wide open. Oh! It's gotta be pass interference. But the ref is waving it off. What?
Come on now. I'm in this hellhole for less than that. Be a man and make a call.
You're right.
Unsportsmanlike conduct. 88 flat. What?
You know, Irvin had some stipulations. Like, hey, by the way, I have to be able to wear 88. I have to be the star. You can't, like, degrade me or embarrass me in any way. And also, I get one scene ready to chew out a referee. Like, you know, he brought that because he's only like 5 or 6 years removed from his Hall of Fame career with your Cowboys.
Your Cowboys,
yep. Right? So, like, he's still got that swagger at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and he looks the part. He makes some amazing catches. It's mm-hmm. a great addition. The football action in the game looks pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
we'll talk about that,
yeah,
for sure.
Filmed by Mark Robert Ellis's team, who's a famed sports coordinator. He did The Replacements, obviously this movie, The Rookie. He's done a ton of stuff. He's, you name a sports movie, he's had something to do with it. We also love when a racist gets something coming to them. I think it
was. Remember the Titans.
It's Stone Cold. Yeah, same thing. Except Stone Cold, what do you get? He gets clotheslined by Swatowski and shits himself.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you brought up The Replacements, because I got a lot of Replacements-like vibes from that game. You know, the first half is very comedic. There's a lot of kind of like stunts happening, a lot of trick-type plays. And then the second half, the Shane Falco, Paul Crewe character has to kind of take over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The next scene I've got, and this is a spoiler alert, this is my favorite scene. This is one I always look for, is when Paul Krug comes clean. I really like, he gets the scramble after he's throwing the game, they're not blocking for him. Huddles up the team. It's always a moment when this one's on like TNT or something. It's always the moment I want to see when he admits to, throwing that football game and, says, they're going to pin the murder on me and all that stuff, which like, in retrospect, probably could have just, they're walking out for half and be like, hey, by the way, Warden's trying to throw 30 years at me. And like, I know I made some promises, but like, I'm not doing 30 years and all could have been forgiven, but it made for a really good moment.
Look, I'm sure you already know this, but I never said it out loud. I did throw that game. I did it. I was in a bad way with some worse people. After I did it, I felt so shitty, I wish I would have just let them kill me instead. Now, the warden wants to pin Caretaker's murder on me if I don't throw this game. So it looks like I'm gonna get to know you guys a lot better, because I ain't doing that twice in a lifetime. I got a little time left. We can still do this. I'm begging you, put your hands in here.
It did. I have a bit of an issue with that. It's one of the later category. Well, let's talk about it. Let's keep it moving. Sorry, I don't want to keep. I know I keep wanting to interject my thoughts, but this podcast will be 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that's what you're here for. And the final scene, the final TD, the 2-point conversion. It's like the requirement in every sports movie. You gotta list it. You gotta list that final score so we win. What's your favorite scene in this one?
God, it's a combination of Sandler playing one-on-one with Michael Irvin, and then any getting the band together scene, the recruitment scene. I do think, just to nitpick a little bit, I think they picked up like one or two too many like giant muscle-bound angry dudes. Like, you saw the same scene 3 or 4 times in a row of like them going to like an estranged prisoner who's like locked away on his own, and they're like, hey, the guards are playing, and that guard who's been bullying you this whole time, he's gonna be playing too. And then all of a sudden the muscle bound dude is in. That literally happens 3 times in a row. That probably could have been once, maybe twice. Also, how big is this prison, Crash? It's probably the size of the state of Delaware.
It's got the most like muscular prisoners on the planet.
Yeah, of course. you gotta think these actors are like, great. This probably wasn't shot in Texas. It was probably shot in Atlanta or something for tax reasons. But
there's something in the IMDb trivia about what abandoned prison. I think New Mexico, I think.
New Mexico. Yeah, so to these guys, they're like, great, I'll get a workout in, a tan, I get to have my shirt off most of the time. This is an easy paycheck for me.
Yeah, the gym at this place must have been quite the scene. Like, off shooting. I mean, you got some dudes in there pushing around some plates. I love the recruiting aspect of it, but it did get repetitive. Hey, this guy who's turning off your Joy Behar is going to play. So let's do that.
But it was nice how they did it like in phases. Like, he first gets protection at the line. He then did some speed. And then last he wins over Michael Irvin and like, I guess the rest of the receivers who we don't see at all, but just like all the tall African-American dudes who like initially shunned him, who were playing basketball in that first scene. So it was cool. They did it well. It just may have dragged on a little too long.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going with the scene where Paul comes clean. I'm a sucker for that shit. Let's take a quick ad break and then get back with our best quote.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, we're back. Best quote. This one, I will say, does not have the Sandler, the typical, like, there, in The Waterboy and Billy Madison and Happy, there's a ton of just random funny lines that just make you shit your pants. Yeah. This one is not as much like that. There's very little laugh out loud humor. Did you have a best quote? Did you have a, because with a comedy, with a sports comedy, most of the time the best quote is going to be like your favorite joke, like the Jim thing, the Jim Rome thing, the hot dog vendors, high powered rifles. I love the combination.
Yeah. So a lot of the lines in this movie, I think, were made for the trailer, because I rewatched the trailer just right before we started recording, and I was like, oh, they took all the good lines from the movie and put them in the trailer. And in a weird way, the way it's shot, a lot of those lines just kind of hang in the air, and it's almost like they were like, well, this will definitely be in the trailer. A lot of Chris Rock's lines are like that. We'll get into Chris Rock in a little bit. But so for the lines that I really responded well to is all this stuff initially with crew in the car chase. So he gets pulled over by Dan Patrick and his pointy-eared partner. And the pointy-eared partner says something like, oh, that's tough. Shit happens. And Paul Crewe goes, yeah, shit does happen. I mean, look what happened to your ears. That is so fucking funny. That is just a well-written, like, writer's joke. I love that. It's just, it's a burn. It's a zing. Everyone around you laughs. The guy feels a little embarrassed, but he's not super angry about it. And then he's just got, like I said, Paul Crewe's got this, like, weird little swagger to him. Obviously, he's drunk and driving his girlfriend's stolen Bentley, but literally, like, before he peels out, he's like, hey, you guys finish this beer, I got five more, take care, and drives off. I liked that. Those made me comfortable with the character. Whereas a lot of Sandler roles are him just doing weird voices. I can't even do a good Sandler impression. It's just like,
yeah, that's a tough, if you don't have it, you can't pull it out of the toolbox. I'm not an impression guy.
The other character who to me was like a line machine that I really loved was Switowski. Like, for some reason, I don't usually respond well to like big dumb oaf characters, but I think Switowski's like childlike wonder, it just did it for me this time, man. It was so funny. There's the scene where Paul Crewe and Chris Rock's character Caretaker are sharing a bottle of Kettle One in their prison cells next to each other.
Normal prison.
Somehow. Yeah, just normal prison. A nice bottle of Kettle and glassware, apparently. Because, yeah, giving prisoners shards of glass has never gone wrong. Paul Crewe says, here's to the first friend I've had in I don't know how long. And all of a sudden you hear Switowski's voice like boom down. And he's like, I thought I was your friend, Paul. And it's so funny. Crewe goes, you are my friend, Switowski. Just finish your coloring book and go back to sleep. And he goes, okay. It was funny, man. I just laughed. I don't know why. Finish your coloring book to me was really funny.
Yeah. Chris Rock is really going for it in this one. Yeah. A lot of trailer lines. The one Chris Rock line that really got me is when he asks, it's during the basketball game, he asks Burt Reynolds, you know, can Crewe play ball? And Burt Reynolds just like, yeah, he's a natural athlete. And Chris Rock said, so is Greg Louganis, but I get he get his ass whipped out there.
A Louganis line. That's you know, that name hasn't been thrown around in a while.
Yeah, I'm not sure the Louganis reference holds up. And I think the last time we saw Greg Louganis was in the Entourage movie.
I've never seen it.
I'm telling you, you need to experience it.
Is that a good show? Should I check that show out?
You should probably check it out. It's it's these cool guys that are totally unproblematic hanging out in Hollywood. You'd love it.
Yeah, someone should start a podcast.
Yeah, they should. Okay, let's roll into the most authentic, least authentic sports parts of this movie.
Do it.
What to you stands out is authentic, and I think there's actually more authentic stuff to pull from in an Adam Sandler sports comedy than you'd really think. What stood out to you
in a football movie at that? Because football is really hard to replicate. There's so much action going on. If someone isn't, like you said, like an ex-player or just have the proper training, it's very transparently wrong. So all of the on-field action looked good to me. They do some Hollywood stuff. It's a lot of close-up shots, shot from a low angle to make these guys look huge on the screen. And then slow motion. Slow motion is like the number one cinematographer trick to make things look better than they actually are. So slow motion gives the impression that Nelly is running extraordinarily fast, dancing around people while they're flying past him for tackles. And really, that's choreography. That's like, okay, Nelly, plant your foot here and stuntman, dive in this direction and we'll shoot it all in 60 frames per second, 120 frames per second, and it's going to look fucking beautiful. The slow motion is reminiscent of, and I know you've done this movie in the past, Wahlberg in Invincible.
I have not done this movie in the past.
Well, I'm raising my hand for that one if you want to do another football.
The funny thing I was going to say is I'm pretty sure that we had said we were going to do that one like 2 years ago. I just haven't gotten around to it. So you're still on the hook for that one.
Long story short, Wahlberg is playing the real life safety for the Eagles in the 70s named Vince Papale. And Vince Papale's like 6'3 in real life, and he was known to be a speed demon, to just burn people off the line. So they have to give the impression that like 5'6 walking steroid Mark Wahlberg is super fast. So every time he's running in super slow motion, and people are just like amazed at how fast he's running in the background. And so it's a good little Hollywood trick, and they do that with a lot of the on-field action in this game.
He's going to hear this podcast and be so fucking pissed at you. He's going to show up at your door at 3 o'clock in the morning after getting his morning
workout. Well, that's when he usually wakes up. Yeah, after his morning workout. He's not going to listen right now because he's been asleep for 2.5 hours.
No, the football action is what it is for me. I mean, sports movie, it can really come in three different things. One is it's incredible, and like you talk about the action in that one where it really adds to the movie, like a Warrior, the boxing in Creed, like it's something that it heightens and brings the movie to new heights. It's so cool. I think Miracle's kind of like that too. This movie is kind of right in the middle of like, it doesn't take away from it. And that's really important. You don't ever feel like you're watching fake ass football. You're not watching the movie Necessary Roughness or something like that. Because when you get into that, or you get into Summer Catch, it takes you out of it. You're just like, that's just not fucking real. It doesn't look good. This looks passable. It helps that they got all those awesome stunt doubles. They got people who they got it. They cast a bunch of athletes like that stuff, that plays. I thought it was really effective. And I think it makes this movie a lot more watchable. If this movie had bad sports action, I don't think we would come back to it that much, because it's not that terribly funny.
It isn't. And so it's one of those things where if you were to look at the, like, all right, you're on your streaming service, right? So you see it like on HBO Max and Netflix. If you were to see the Longest Yards cover art with Sandler and Chris Rock and Burt Reynolds, and I were to ask you, hey, is the football in this movie good? You'd be like, no.
No way.
It's like another Sandler, like, you know, cheap out, like, you know, phone it in performance. But really, it is good, and I think that is why people keep returning to it and why it resonated for so many people back in 2005.
Yeah. I have something for least authentic.
Let's hear
the
it.
First practice, first time he's and this is before he's pulled any talent. They come to the line and he hikes it, and they all start fighting each other, and it turns into this slot fest. JR, football is the most popular sport in America. Every single person watches it. You would be more likely to have these guys pretend like they're NFL pro bowlers and like do all these fake like lineman moves that they really don't know how to do and probably get hurt that way than just break out fighting. It just wouldn't happen. I get it's a comedy. I'm diving way too far in it, but like, it's the most popular sport in America. Everyone knows the basics of how to play football.
Also, they're all standing around the yard together for what seemingly seems like 8 hours a day. They have plenty of time to fight each other whenever they want.
Yeah.
They didn't just wait for that moment to do it. But you're right. It's a comedy. It's a little nitpicky, but I don't disagree with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have something least authentic?
I have one, and it's very nitpicky as well, but this podcast is kind of for.
Yeah.
So the guards don't seem to have any skill or speed players. I didn't see one like running back, one tall receiver. Granted, they're all like, you know, these
burly ass
white
dudes.
Yeah. There's like, I think Stone Cold Steve Austin is the fullback, right? Like, so there's a lot of like punch it down the middle to Stone Cold, but like, you know, you just, it's a football team. Who's William Fichtner throwing it to? Nobody, apparently.
Yeah, it might be a recruiting problem for the warden. I mean, because it, like, you know, you can get talented skill guys to go to Texas A&M. Even though, you know, it's Texas A&M, you can't get talented skill guys to go to the middle of the Texas desert. I can't imagine the town is a place they want to live in. That's not, it's not a place, not what you want to do. They can, there's probably better guard football somewhere else for those guys.
100%.
But yeah, it's just, the whole team is just muscle. That's all it is.
Yeah. Probably not a lot of fun to watch them, you know, just it's a lot of checkdowns and running the option. Just nothing crazy exciting. Not a lot of passing.
It's literally like watching Wisconsin without a first round running back. That's all it is. Yep. It's probably where all the guys came from. They came from like Wisconsin and in early iterations of Texas A&M.
Yep.
Let's talk about what worked in this one. Why it's somehow an all-star. Because this could have easily turned into a starter borderline bench warmer movie. I mean, we saw what happened to a lot of grown-ups and all the other bedtime stories and everything he got into.
Grown-Ups, which made $500 million.
Just all the fucking money got him this Netflix deal. Just unbelievable. Yeah. Life isn't fair. Something that helps, because again, you have to, I mean, you're naturally going to root for Crew because he's Adam Sandler and you know you're supposed to. It helps that the guards are all wildly racist. It makes them very, very easy to root against. There's no, it makes you think that like, not, this isn't, you know, we don't have to worry about rooting for some criminals because these guys are all racist and they deserve what's coming to them.
Abhorrently racist. The scene in the library with Nelly and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Terry Crews and Michael Irvin sitting around.
Like, I forgot
the
about
amount
that.
Of N-words. The amount of N-words that were thrown around. I was like looking around my house, like, am I not in trouble for watching this? This is a PG-13 movie. It's very easy to hate the guards. They also like happen to just beat the shit out of every single prisoner every scene they get. There is no redeeming. You'd think there might be like one sympathetic character on the guards, right? Give the team a little depth. Maybe him and Sandler like hit it off and he becomes kind of an ally towards the end of the game. But nope. Every single one of them should literally burn alive.
I mean, it's got a lot of the prison movie staples. It's got violent guards who beat the shit out of the prisoners all the time. That's from Shawshank. It's got the hot box right from Shawshank. Yep. It's got guys who can get stuff right from Shawshank. It's just, I mean, you know, it's not the most realistic prison movie on the planet, but it's not too shabby. You know, a realistic aspect, a guy getting 20 extra years for one punch. Pretty good commentary on the prison system.
Yeah, I was about to say that felt relevant. So I've got something a little different. It's the most enjoyable part of this movie for me, outside of all the stuff we've talked about. This wasn't a very enjoyable movie. The cameos, the way the sports scenes were filmed, the soundtrack was banging.
MTV movie.
I think we heard Creedence twice, AC/DC a few times. Eminem, Nelly, of course. I mean, he's got to have a song or two on the soundtrack. And I did a little deep dive because I was like, MTV Films, like, are they still making movies? The first movie I ever remember seeing that was an MTV Films movie was Orange County. Did you ever watch Orange County?
Yeah, Jack Black and Colin Hanks, young Colin Hanks.
Young both of them. And that's a really good underrated old movie. But I went through their filmography and I want to read to you six MTV film movies that I think you'll respond well to. First one, Beavis and Butthead Do America. It might be a little more my years of school than you.
A little more you. Beavis and Butthead was a little old for me.
But that was the first MTV Films movie, and it was a blockbuster hit. So that's what kind of started them off. Then Orange County, which was kind of an under-the-radar hit. Napoleon Dynamite, which made
a phenomenon.
$300 million. Coach Carter, which I don't know if you've done on this podcast.
Haven't done, but that's a quality sports film.
And then bringing up the rear, Jackass 1, 2, and 3D. I mean,
we are like 2 months away from Jackass 4. I cannot wait.
I think those are qualified as sports movies, Crash.
Oh yeah, no, we're talking Jackass on the pod here real soon.
That's awesome.
I can't think of a better movie theater experience I've had than going to see Jackass 2.
I was in college in 2006, and I was on the track team at DePaul University, and it was like the first team bonding experience was going to see Jackass 2 in theaters, and it is one of the most, it's seared into my brain, who I was sitting next to, what I was wearing, what I was eating, because it was just so memorable. I'll go to my grave remembering that more than I will like years of my life. It's incredible how entertaining that experience is. So anyways, long story short, MTV Films, hit makers. In 2006.
They did Varsity Blues as well.
They did?
Yeah. MTV movie.
I'm not as big of a fan of that movie, and that's why I left it off.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it is what it is. Yeah, I mean, the soundtrack slaps, although I don't know if you heard, if you listened to, I can't remember what song ends the credits. It might be Shake Your Tail Feather or something, like something that slaps. Yeah. But it ends pretty quickly, and it goes into some Nelly song that is Cheeks. It is fucking awful. It is the song they promised Nelly they would put on those credits to get him on that movie, and it is real bad.
Or he like recorded the song and they were like, oh,
this
is
great,
at the end of the
credits we'll put it in the movie, we'll make sure someone hears
don't worry Nelly. Yeah, I stood next to Nelly at a urinal once.
How was that?
He's short and he had his whole crew with him. I worked at an Italian restaurant in downtown Chicago, and I don't know. It was one of those moments where I'm not going to say anything to Nelly at the urinal. Like, he was in town for one of those, like, holiday concert jingle bash type things. And, you know, I just kind of like gave him a look, maybe a nod. Not obviously while we were at the urinal and as we were walking out, but.
Did he have the Band-Aid on? Was that Band-Aid Arinelli?
No, he was actually, I think he was dressed in all black with the do-rag and yeah. But he, I mean, I remember him sitting at a table of like 14 people and they were all like his crew.
The squad. They were probably, they all flew out to New Mexico to have this one filmed. You know what else worked about this one? Is they got James Cromwell, respected actor,
incredible,
to play the villain, who is awesome in this.
Awesome.
One.
Yeah. Deep, like, you know, Central Texas warden, like, just, you know, cares more about his constituents and his, you know, how his polling is doing, like, as opposed to, like, actually taking care of his prisoners. It's the perfect movie villain. It really
Pretty
is.
Pretty sure he does, like, iRobot and then this. Like, which is that's a choice. He's also in, oh god, what is he? He's in Succession right now, which is fantastic. Yeah, my favorite show on TV, besides Ted Lasso, of course. So, what didn't work in this one? Because the movies like this, even though we like them, these are the fun ones to pick up. Oh, the most obvious one, and this is the thing with almost any prison movie. These guys are in prison for a reason.
Yeah.
Some of these guys have been in prison. Like Nate Scarborough has been in prison for a long time. We got guys who are listed as 5-star dangerous. There's two sides to this coin. There are some dudes who are there. There are likely some dudes on this team who did some real bad shit.
Yeah.
There's also some dudes that are wrongfully convicted and probably should not be in jail.
Yeah.
So it's a mixed bag. I feel like that evens itself out and we can still root for the team. But you might have noticed this. You know when they run into the stadium and the one guy stands up and he holding up the sign says, I didn't do it.
Yeah,
did you know who that was?
No.
That was radio personality Big Boy.
Wow. Wait. You know, if I watched Entourage, which I don't, he may have been on 3 or 4 episodes of Entourage. Because Hot 97, right?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah. Incredible. There's some Outlander, outlying cameos in this movie that are good. I was a big D12 fan growing up, and all of D12 minus their star,
minus the guy who got D12 famous,
are just like standing on the sidelines during the basketball game. And then you had a bunch of ex NFL coaches and stuff just kind of patrolling the sidelines of this movie. It's really cool. I love that, like, all the stars came out for this. But okay, what didn't work? I have two things. The first is Terry Crews' character, Cheeseburger Eddie. I mentioned earlier, every Adam Sandler movie has a character or a side plot that's like aimed directly at like a 9 to 10-year-old. And this was, I guess, it. And it just doesn't work. Maybe it was like a marketing deal. Like MTV's like, listen, in order to make this film, you got to bring up items on the fucking dollar menu at McDonald's 12 times. But... it doesn't even, not even cracking a smile. It's just weird and strange and clownish to me. And Terry Crews is very funny.
Yeah, and what's the, I mean, this is diving way too deep into that. What are the logistics of getting the, how is he doing this? Because Caretaker is our guy who can get stuff. Cheeseburger Eddie just has a McDonald's plug that is unexplained. And that town did not look like it had a close McDonald's.
Listen, there's a close McDonald's everywhere in the world, as you know, so...
You would be surprised,
actually, yeah,
sir. I have driven out to West Texas. You would be surprised how far you can go without finding a close McDonald's.
That's interesting. Yeah, so, I mean, and that's, like, more of a nitpick, but I think my second least favorite thing, and this was just overall kind of a bummer, was I did not respond super well to Chris Rock's character. And I fucking love Chris Rock. He's one of my favorite stand-up comedians of all time. Roll with the New was like one of the first comedy albums I ever bought. It's probably one of the big reasons I started doing stand-up comedy. But Chris Rock's never been regarded as a good actor. But his style of comedy does not belong in a PG-13 movie. Like, he needs to be in an R-rated version that should be just being like, you just got knocked the fuck out! Like, he needs to be screaming hilarities. But he's kind of what I mentioned. He's kind of just doing lines meant for the trailer. Clearly, you know, he's one of Sandler's buddies, so... I don't know, it feels off to me. I didn't smile once or laugh at anything he said, and he kind of had this run of this in the 90s and early 2000s where he was in a lot of stuff, but I don't think any of it was that funny. What do you think,
Crash? It's kind of hard to pick out the best Chris Rock movie, because, like, Chris, yeah, you think true. About Chris Rock and he's just, he's crazy funny. Like when he hosts the Oscars, it's really funny and all his stand-ups yep. are really funny. But like I go just, okay, I love the movie Head of State.
Oh,
I
you
think,
know what?
That's I think Head of State is very funny. Mm-hmm. But most everything else, I mean, like Down to Earth had its moments. CB4 was real early Chris Rock, but I like CB4. CB4 is basically, have you seen CB4?
No, I haven't.
So CB4 is like early 90s, and it's essentially a parody of, it's like a parody of NWA, essentially, okay. that Chris Rock forms. Chris Rock's character is kind of like a poser, and he forms this, he takes the identity of this gangster who is played by Charlie Murphy nice. And forms this NWA type group. And I think like even cool. they basically rip off the song Straight Outta Compton, and it's young Chris Rock, but it's going to be, yeah, there's not a, I mean, he was just in the new Saw movie.
Fargo season 2.
Yeah. So, he was in the Fargo season, but he's also in the new Saw movie. Yeah. No, that I can see that. I wanted to ask you another Tracy Morgan and the, yeah. And that whole I think that plot gets thrown out if this movie gets made in 2020. Those were jokes that, I mean, it wasn't that funny.
It wasn't even at the time. It's like, oh yeah, I guess in prison there would be characters who want to be females and are like the resident, you know, bitches in quotes.
In Shawshank, we called those the bull queers, and they were a lot scarier.
And they were very, yeah, every time you see, what was that guy's name?
Boggs. Boggs. That's terrifying.
Boggs the pederast.
Who's in your favorite movie, The Departed?
I know. He, every time you see that actor, you're like, he's that's Boggs forever. Yeah, that's terrifying. He has taken Andy Dufresne's
butthole virginity.
Yeah, thank you.
No, I mean the thing with Tracy Morgan, you see him now, like I would have just rather him been some sort of like kooky random prisoner or something. Yeah.
A coach, or like, you know, he's like the kicker on the team, right? You know, he's just like the goofy kicker, something silly.
Yeah. I have a couple more. I think we all would have known if there was a Heisman Trophy winner in prison. I feel like that would have been common knowledge. Like Nate Scarborough, I thought you were dead. I don't think that would have been, I think that would still be big news. Like we'd all be like, if hypothetically OJ Simpson was in prison, we would all be talking about it.
I lived in San Francisco for a very long time, and I lived right near, I'm forgetting the name of the fucking prison now. It's where like Manson was. And
Alcatraz.
Like,
No.
But, like, obviously Alcatraz, but like the one that's still in existence, and all the listeners are probably screaming into their headphones right now. But you drive past it and you'd be like, oh, I know the top 5 prisoners who are in that prison right now. And you're absolutely right. Nate Scarborough would be one of those people.
Yeah. I'm not sure. There's just no chance they'd put Babyface Bob in the booth with Chris Berman.
Yeah, it wasn't even that funny. And also just Chris Berman can't act. Chris Berman's very like one speed. He does his like 3 or 4 reoccurring bits. And so just like seeing him try to be like scared in quotes or like uncomfortable, you just said, okay, Berman, have another drink and like relax.
that's really all I've got for what didn't work. The Kevin Costner and Freddie Prinze Jr. Awards for Best and Worst On-Screen Athlete, we've kind of covered it in that they grabbed a bunch of athletes. Like Michael Irvin is a Hall of Fame football player. You know, all these wrestlers are in fantastic shape. There's really nothing, you know, we talked about Sandler's shortcomings, but I don't think there's anything he could have helped with that. Like I thought he played to the best of his ability, really. I don't think there's anything that's taking away from it, kind of like I said earlier.
No, I completely agree. And I think if you looked at that group of guys, let's just put all of them, let's take the movie out of it and put them all in a group. The best athlete out of all of them by far is Michael Irvin. Like he's the alpha prick athlete in that group. They're all listening to him. They're all listening to him tell stories about winning 3 Super Bowls. He's just recovering from a spinal injury. He's got like a swagger to him that doesn't like even compute to the other guys. So it's Irvin by a mile, and there's no other answer.
Yeah. Yeah. The Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. This is an all-time Lenny Harris group. This is a tough...
There's a lot.
There's one person we haven't mentioned at all who is on a heater in this one for a very minimal amount of screen time. Shout out to the great Cloris Leachman as Lynette the Secretary, an all-time horny movie performance.
But that's like all of her performances, like after the age of like 70.
Not so fast, sugar bear. You gotta earn them. Woo! 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 Woo!
We only got 15 minutes, but sunshine, we're gonna make them all count.
One more, please.
Cloris Leachman played the old horny lady, the roast of Bob Saget,
yeah,
where she incredible. Has the line about she's just here to fuck John Stamos is incredible.
Yeah, I almost forgot about that scene because I probably got up and like got a drink of water or something during it because like you just knew what was gonna happen. Like she's gonna be horny for Paul Crewe and corner him in an office and he was gonna get something from her. So yeah, I kind of just roll my eyes at it because it's like every single role that she has. But yeah, no, she's going for it 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
I mentioned it earlier, but Bob Sapp as Switowski, just
he's great.
The big baby in like a 6'8 muscle bound body. He was an ex wrestler and a 2-time ex practice field player for my Chicago Bears in the 90s. Oh. So I liked seeing that.
That would make sense.
That
he's
endeared
got
him to me more.
You mentioned earlier Fichtner, William Fichtner, who played Knauer. Who is he to you? Because he's a that guy.
He's a that guy. What's funny is like I always for some reason just see him as the bank manager in The Dark Knight.
When
the Joker shows up. But he's definitely had much, much, much bigger, badder roles.
One of the guys in The Perfect Storm.
Yeah, he's right.
The guy who he's not getting along with John C. Reilly, and then he saves him. And then saves him all for naught. Sorry to spoil The Perfect Storm. Cromwell is the warden we talked about is great.
Yeah.
His right-hand man, whose name I forgot to write down, with the Colonel Sanders guy. Yeah. that's another
great line by Sanders.
It's a funny bit. But I mean, this is just an all-time, like, so many people are...
So who's who, yeah.
Yeah, are getting to share the ball a little bit.
Multiple times I just, like, exclaimed. I think that's... Seeing, like, Romanowski out there, like...
We haven't even talked about Romanowski.
Like, he was perfect. They utilized him the perfect amount. Like, he had a couple scenes where he was motherfucking Paul Crewe, slams his head into a locker a couple times, and... But it's perfect. Nobody liked that dude. So, like, he added to the whole vibe of these are bad dudes who are good football players.
It's funny the guys that they got, the famous guys they got to be guards.
Yeah.
Because it's like Romanowski, Bosworth, who is as polarizing as you possibly could be. I am not a wrestling guy. Was Stone Cold, was he a villain? Like, did he have a villain turn? Or was he, everyone loves the beer shower thing, but I mean, he's certainly intimidating. But they got a few guys who were like, no one's ever rooted for Bill Romanowski.
Yeah. You know who I was just shocked beyond belief wasn't in this movie? Who, if you would have asked me, again, haven't seen it in 16 years. If you would have held a gun to my head and said, JR, is Dwayne The Rock Johnson in The Longest Yard? I would have been like, of course. It's a bunch of muscle-bound dude playing football in a prison. He's made like 6 of those. And the fact that he wasn't at this stage in his career, Kyle, at 2005, when he's still doing the wrestling thing, when he's just starting to break out of it, I think he maybe only has like that Tooth Fairy movie under his...
He's like coming off the rundown, I think.
Yeah, he's right not yet like what he is now. I'm just more shocked that he wasn't involved in something like this.
The interesting thing about him, though, is he went right into, like, how many supporting roles has he really taken?
That's true. He would have had to be the coach or something.
He did the supporting role in that weird sequel to Get Shorty. That thing. He and it played like kind of a weird, like, I think like a closeted gay character or something like that. Mm. And after that, it's like it's always he's going to be the star, even if it's not a star in a huge movie. I don't think he so. I mean, if you make this in 2008, he's probably the star.
True. 2008? What?
Yeah, if you make this in like 2008, 2009.
Oh, like gotcha, like two years later.
Because
he did Gridiron Dane 2 years after that. I've got his IMDb up in front of me. So The Rundown's 2003. Walking Tall is 2004.
Oh, I love Walking Tall. That's an objectively like not great movie that I'm a huge fan of.
So it was Be Cool, which was the sequel you were thinking of. 2005, this time period. And then right after this is Gridiron Dane. So again, I would have definitely gotten this mixed up. If I hadn't just recently watched it. And then his career kind of takes off in, it looks like, 2010, 2011, with Fast and the Furious, Journey to the Mysterious Island, G.I. Joe, Pain and Gain, Fast and Furious. Yeah, just, that's where it all just becomes. He becomes like a business, essentially. Yeah.
I handed him over some money a few weeks ago to take my son to see Jungle Cruise.
How was that, Crash?
It was fine. It did some things that were good. It did some things. I mean, spoiler, it forced a romantic subplot that was not there.
Between Blunt and him?
Between Blunt and The Rock. And it is not there. It is not something they should have done. It is not good. But
I don't think Dwayne The Rock Johnson is capable of, like, love. Honestly. No,
yeah.
I think he flexes his bicep, smiles, and sells me stuff. You know what I mean?
I would have bought them a lot more as just this adventure duo. But anyways, back to this great movie.
Kyle, when are we doing a episode-by-episode breakdown of Ballers on this podcast?
I mean, at some point, the well's going to run dry. I watched the first season of Ballers.
First season was okay. Next two were not. But yes.
Yeah, I think funniest thing about Ballers is John David Washington is fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and now he's
a superstar.
Yeah. Incredible. Incredible. Well, we'll do Ballers after I give in and just like, you know what? We're just going to talk about Tenet for four episodes. Is there a big chill moment in this one for you? I have one. I talked about Paul Crewe when he admits to shaving the points. I'm like, that's a cool moment.
Yeah.
Michael Irvin showing up to Here Comes the Boom.
That's awesome.
That's my 88 right there.
That's awesome.
That was my first 88. That was pre-Dez. That was so my 88.
Cool. What the hell is he smiling at? Here comes the y'all don't really want it like.
Better if you don't knock it out.
I guarantee it.
Let's do this.
There goes the neighborhood.
Yeah, I get that as a Cowboys fan. That would give me the stupid chills too. If it was Walter Payton. If it was Walter Payton walking out, you know, and for some reason he survived long enough to make this movie in 2005. The whole movie, I'm going, does Burt Reynolds play in the game? Is he like a player? I feel like I remember that. And then when he shows up with the uniform on, I'm like, he totally plays. It's probably the last play of the game. And then he checks himself in. I guess he's essentially like tries to be like a decoy. But then they give him the ball and he runs it in for the tying touchdown. Burt Reynolds is probably 69, 70 years old when they shot this. I mean, he looks great, but it was comedic, but I don't know. He literally, like, grabbing the helmet and running out of the field, I was like, oh, shit, he's going to play. It kind of gave me the chills a little bit.
The unintentional comedy factor of this one is summed up into two things. This movie, you get to see Brian Bosworth lay out Burt Reynolds, and you get to see Michael Irvin and Goldberg dump Gatorade on James Cromwell.
Yeah, just a who's who, a Mad Lib style, like, you know, movie script.
Yeah, yeah. How would you improve this one, JR?
You know, It's pretty good as is. You touched on this a little bit. I think this is, I don't know, like the whole pinning a murder on him halfway through the championship game and all of a sudden it literally being like a life or death stakes thing for him. It was a little transparent. And then at the end, like Fichtner just being like, I would have backed you up on that, so we're actually all good. You're like, well, what the fuck? I think if you drop that whole plot line and then you make it be like the warden being like, listen, you lose this game for me and you're free. You're a free man. You never have to see these guys again. You don't owe them anything. You walked out those front doors. And that just is like grounded in a little bit more of realism to me.
That's a little more like, yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah, but like granted, like, you know, you have the death of Caretaker, so he's like emotional about that. And he's now made friends with all of his teammates. So it makes it a little bit more like, oh, he's got more to lose by doing that. But at the end of the day, anyone's offered a one-way ticket out of there to do anything, they're fucking doing it. He's going to go, I don't care about beating the guards. I care about leaving. Like, and he would tell his teammates that, and I bet 80% of them would be like, yeah, man, of course. Like, that makes total sense.
Who could be funny and also seem like a former NFL quarterback?
Oh, actor-wise.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Could Chris Evans do this?
He's not tall enough, man. Honestly, you need the height, and that's what's so tough about Hollywood. Like,
could Hemsworth do this?
So I'm going to divvy one, and this is aging me a bit, and it doesn't exist in reality. But it's Vince Vaughn circa like 1994.
Oh, like, yes.
He's like 6'4", skinny.
Yes.
He's got that big head. He's got that fucking...
Double Down Trent does
Double
this?
Down Trent Absolutely. Confidence. That's it. He's kind of, he's got a mouth on him, so he keeps getting the shit kicked out of him.
Oh,
it's Vaughn.
I'm so sad that that movie isn't a thing. Oh my God. Because like that... Double Down Trent is lightning in a bottle, because we don't ever the next time we see that guy, he's in Wedding Crashers and he's a little more bloated, he's a little more over the hill, he doesn't have there's a difference in like that the young confidence, like it is, that is lightning in a bottle, Vaughn and Swingers.
In that 10 years somewhere in there, he like is an ex-NFL, or maybe even not even NFL, he's like a college star who just like, you know, his life maybe gets into drugs or something like that, and they need him to turn this team around. So, are we talking about a remake right now? Is that some ideas? Other
kinda,
ideas?
We're kind of combining the How to Improve It and then Before More Restore. So, roll into your, what are your remake thoughts?
Because obviously, like, they should remake this type of movie every 10, 15 years. This
is
great.
It's kind. This one is one of the few I've done on the show where it's like, this is actually prime for a remake. It's 16 years old.
Yep.
It did really well, and you know Hollywood loves a fucking safe bet.
Yep.
Like it's prime for a remake. Do you have what's your thoughts on that?
So this wouldn't be a good film, but I was just thinking about it in terms of like, if this were to happen today, if this were to happen in 2021, this is what this would be. It would be your boy, Johnny Manziel.
Oh God.
Partying somewhere and getting the call, or he fucks his life up so much that he's in prison and he's getting the call. And he just like, this prison is full of just all the has-beens, has-nots, TikTok stars, just burnouts. It's like Chad Ochocinco. It's Ja Rule at running back. You got Vanilla Ice as the kicker. Hulk Hogan is like the assistant coach. This is not a good movie, Crash, by any means.
No, it's terrible.
But yeah, it's actually like one of those straight to streaming, like it's all the way deep in the Amazon Prime sports collection. But it's like that vibe of like, oh, hey, we're all fucking losers, and like we're going to try to beat these guards that are beating up on us. And Johnny Manziel can still throw a football.
And it's called like the longest yard, fourth and goal. That's tough. The thing that stops that from getting made is I think entities with large amounts of money have finally realized that they're no longer ever going to trust Johnny Manziel with any sort of investment whatsoever.
Yeah, he's burned literally every bridge he could possible, so there's no way they're going to put him at the centerpiece of a movie. But that's like the reality show version, is what I'm saying. That's like, you know, hey, we'll make this thing real and put actual cameras there and interview everyone in between every episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question that this gets... I mean, it checks all the boxes. It was really successful. It's already existing IP. There's familiarity with it. You could, you know, honestly, you throw a big ass check at Adam Sandler and he's probably in it as he's Nate Scarborough now. Yeah. And they just run the whole playbook because like he doesn't give a shit about making a bad movie. Like he'll do that in 2 seconds.
That's obvious.
God, we're probably going to get this in 3 years.
And we'll break it down on this.
I'm just to cover our asses. I'm just going to search the longest yard reboot and just make sure that we are not already talking about something that exists. Let's see.
Maybe we'll write it. I'll take the first pass at the draft. You know, I don't live that far from Hollywood. I'm like a 90-minute drive, so we could get in front of the right people.
Yeah, we still got time, so we're good. No one has started on this yet. Oh, there is a USA Today story about apparently Burt Reynolds never saw the movie, which is because he's a fucking lord. Quote: "I didn't see it. I didn't want to see it."
He didn't want to see it?
Didn't want to see
it. That was a paycheck for Reynolds. He was probably only on set for like 6 days. Probably walked away with, you know, $2 million.
This is incredible. Quote, "There were like 7 people in an office, and they were talking about how they were all going to make the best picture of the longest yard," says Reynolds. "And I said, well, I hope you make a good one, but I don't think you're going to make a better one." Reynolds makes it clear he went for a paycheck part. I said, "Well, good luck. How many days am I working?" 3 days. I said, "Okay, and how much money is it?" "Okay, this is good."
Dude, you just reached a point in your career as a former sex icon where you just go, "Yeah, fuck it. How much are you gonna pay me? Sure, I'll do it."
This is just, this is stunning. God. Burt Reynolds, what a fucking lord. R.I.P. JR, this was great. It's great to have you back on the show. Yeah, tell the folks again where they can vote for you to send you to Austin so we can hang out.
Let's do it. Yeah, send me to Austin so me and Tyler can do this in person. In the show notes of today's episode, we should have a link to the South by Southwest website. Just hit that. You gotta sign up for South by Southwest of town. I know it takes 5 seconds, and then there's literally just a button with like an upward arrow. I just need you to click that. I'm literally gonna try to get this via upvote, so I'm tapping all my Austin-based friends, all my Texas people, and I'd love to come in and see your gorgeous face in person, Kyle.
And we can play some golf. Folks, again, if you do that, send me a DM. I'll shout you out on the next episode. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate on Apple Podcasts, 5 stars. Leave a 5-star review. And if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. You can support the show. You can pick next month's movie. The voting's open right now. Early lead for the greatest game ever played, which kind of has me a little surprised.
So good.
I'm still very surprised it's winning. I thought Love and Basketball was going to take it, but there's still time to vote. You got the poll closes the last day of August. So patreon.com/bigscreensports, support the show. Help us out. I'll catch you on Thursday for Ted Lasso Episode 4 recap. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.